ce qui est à ma blog. Ce qui est à ma blog.
Hey everyone, my name is Alex. Welcome to the second episode of Sugidama Podcast, the podcast about Japanese sake, the drink so diverse that I don't even know where to begin. So I will start with terminology. Be warned, this episode could sound a little bit technical, but please bear with me. Last time, we talked about sake myths, and here and there I was casually dropping strange Japanese words like Junmai, Ginjo, Daiginjo. And some of you might go, eh? What is he talking about? Honestly, I did the same when I heard these words for the first time. They actually represent a sake classification system. And at the beginning, I kept mixing them up. Do you have to know these strange words? Tricky question. My wife, for example, never learned them. At a wine shop, she would choose sake by the label on the bottle. If it looks attractive, she would buy the sake. At a restaurant, she will just describe to a waiter or sommelier, with a smile, what kind of sake she likes, and they would always suggest something nice. For me, knowing these terms is definitely very important. I'm always curious about what sake I drink and want to know more about it. I like choosing a certain sake for a certain occasion based on a style or type. I enjoy trying sake I've never tried before. That's why knowing what all these words mean helps me a lot. It will definitely help you to identify the sake types you like, to understand the difference between these incomprehensible sake bottles in a shop or exotic sake names on a wine list, to decide what sake you should choose for a particular meal, or whether you need to pop the bottle in the fridge before drinking, or it's fine as it is, and so on. So let me be your guide in this vast and strange sake universe, and you can decide for yourself whether you want to remember all this sake mamba jamba, or just go easy, like my wife does. What fascinates me in sake is its simplicity and complexity at the same time. On the surface, all sake might look and even taste the same to you, as it did to me at the beginning of my sake journey, but it couldn't be further from the truth. Sake is amazingly a very diverse drink. If you think about it, sake is made from four basic ingredients: rice, water, and fermenting cultures, koji and yeast. However, the brewing process is very complex, and to achieve this simplicity and complexity, you have to put a lot of efforts and knowledge. A look, taste, and even a feel of sake depends on a wide range of brewing techniques, tricks, and methods. The beauty of the drink is that you can get completely different styles of sake from the same ingredients. So it's a great fun to read how brewers use their skills to make sake taste and feel exactly how a master sake brewer, called Toji in Japanese, wants it. For example, at certain stages, they often use a stopwatch for precision. 10 seconds more, and the sake could be very different. For me, the level of skills used in sake brewing is really impressive, and I feel a deep respect for the brewer's dedication, skills, artistry, and hard work used in making this delicious drink. And with 1,200 sake breweries still active in Japan, many of which managed by Toji with her or his particular brewing style, you can imagine how diverse the sake universe is. There are fruity sake, savory sake, dry, sweet, peppery, crisp, light, full-bodied, and many, many more. It's sometimes mind-boggling how wide the range is. And again, they all are made using the same base ingredients without adding anything else. It's really something. But it's not all. When you try sake for the first time, you may think that what you are drinking is a typical sake which you usually get. And then you start hearing these strange Japanese words and realize that there are also sake types, grades, styles. You can have just normal sake or sparkling sake, which is something new in Japan, cloudy sake, unpasteurized sake, aged, agency the barrel sake. Or you can have table sake, special, premium, or super premium sake. There are also several brewing methods used for making sake to add to the mix. And all these types, styles, grades, and methods create such an endless range of taste and experiences that you can never be bored trying new sake. As everything in Japan, sake has its own official classification system based on the criteria we will talk about in a moment. But this system came into existence only in the end of the 1980s or the beginning of the 1990s. Before that, sake was divided into three classes: special, or tokyu in Japanese, first, ikkyu, and second, nikkyu. Breweries could submit their sake to the government's inspectors, and they decided whether it was special or first class. Anything which couldn't make it or not submit it at all were second class by default. The mark of the special or first class ensured the quality of the sake, given that there were around 5,000 sake breweries back then in Japan, and allowed the breweries to charge higher prices, though paying higher taxes. The system was introduced after the war and worked fine, given that sake at that time was not particularly diverse. A few decades forward, and the competition from beer, wine, and whiskey highballs forced sake breweries to become more innovative. The industry saw the rise of Junmai sake, I'll talk about it in a minute, had so-called ginja boom, the emergence of highly refined sake, and a lot of other cool stuff. So, by the end of the 1980s, the system fell out of favor with both the brewers, who wanted more diversification and less arbitrary approach, and the government, who wanted more taxes, as they usually do. So the new sake classification system, which we currently have and which is now criticized by many sake professionals, was introduced in the 90s. While it's been around for the last 30 years, I have met a few Japanese people who still thought that sake was classified into those all three classes. Well, I guess they are not big sake drinkers. Currently, each sake could be defined by three dimensions. The first dimension is grades or styles, then we have types of sake, and finally, brewing methods. So, let's look at the first dimension in this episode. To understand sake grades, we need to understand how sake is actually made and get a bit more technical. As I said, the sake production process is quite complex. So I'm not going to overwhelm you with myriads of technical points, which might be fascinating for me, but probably too much for you at this stage. I still remember how my head was spinning from all this technical stuff. So I will introduce it in small, more digestible portions in the next few episodes, and we'll take a deep look at the sake brewing process in a separate episode. As I have already mentioned, in order to make alcohol, you need sugar and yeast. Rice doesn't have sugar, but it has a lot of starch. And to convert starch into sugar, sake brewers use koji, a malt, which invades rice and magically turns starch into sugar. So far, so good. However, a rice grain consists not only of starch. It also has proteins, fats, amino acids, minerals, all this good stuff, which adds some character to the drink. Too much of it makes sake rough. Luckily for us, starch is usually located in the core of a rice grain, especially in sake rice. The starchy core is called shinpaku, translated simply as a white core. So to get rid of unwanted elements, we just need to polish rice to the core. The extent a rice grain is polished is called a polishing or milling ratio in sake. There is a Japanese word for that, but I won't bother you with it for now. The polishing ratio number is a bit counterintuitive. It means how much rice had been left rather than polished off. So if the polishing ratio is 90%, it means that 10% were polished off and 90% remained. If the ratio is 50%, a half of the grain has been milled off. I'll let you figure out for yourself what is 45 polishing ratio means. However, it creates this linguistic paradox, typical for Japan, when one refers to a higher polishing ratio, which is actually numerically low. Like 50% is a higher polishing ratio compared to 60%. You see what I mean? The polishing process has been used for centuries for sake making. However, before the 1930s, the rice was usually polished to the 90%, which is basically your typical white rice. The process of rice polishing is quite delicate. Firstly, you can't damage the grains. Broken or cheap rice grains usually can't be used for sake brewing. Secondly, if during polishing rice becomes too hot, it will ruin the taste of sake. So you need a special machinery to polish rice below 90%, which only widely appeared in Japan before the Second World War. So how does the process work? Before the start, rice is weighed. Then the grains are lifted to the top of the polishing machine and dropped through the rotating wheel, which takes small bits of it, and then weighed again. Then the process repeats over and over until the wanted ratio, based on the weight rather than size of the grains, is achieved. The polishing process is quite slow. If you go too fast, you'll get more broken grains and the temperature will rise too high. For example, if you need to polish rice to 50%, it usually takes 50 hours, more than 2 days of constant polishing. After the rice is polished, it's left for a few weeks to properly cool down. Then it's steamed and cooled again. Koji is added to start the conversion of starch into sugar. The more rice and water are added together with lactic acid and yeast to make a starter. Finally, all the rice and water in stages together with a starter are placed into a steel vat and brewing begins. The resulted fermenting mash is called maromi in Japanese. It looks very futuristic because of the foam formed on the surface and smells very nice, especially if the rice is well polished. It takes a few weeks for koji and yeast to work in parallel, the multiple parallel fermentation from the previous episode, remember, to convert starch into sugar and sugar into alcohol. When it's done, the brewer might add some amount of distilled alcohol, which is also called brewer's alcohol, to the maromi. We'll discuss the reasons for doing it in a moment, but let me finish. The maromi then is pressed to remove rice particles, sake is filtered, pasteurized, diluted to 15-16%, bottled, pasteurized again, sealed, labeled, and shipped to retailers and restaurants. So this is the sake brewing process in a nutshell. Mind, I've skipped a few steps to make the process simpler. So now we know how sake is made. We can move to the sake classification. The current classification of Japanese sake is based on two criteria. The first is whether distilled alcohol has been added into maromi, the fermentation mash, before pressing, and the second, a polishing ratio. Let's start with the first one, addition of alcohol. Historically, and it started during the Edo period in the 17th, 18th century, the alcohol was added into maromi mostly to preserve it from spoiling. Mind that there were no refrigerators at that time, and given that alcohol content in sake is relatively low, raising the ABV a bit higher worked as a great preservative. The second reason was to adjust the flavor of the sake, and we will get back to it later. Then, during the Second World War, when Japan was struggling with food shortage, sake producers were told to start adding alcohol in order to increase yield and use less rice. Distilled alcohol can be made of any grains, like barley for example, so it didn't affect the food supply much. When the war was over, most of sake breweries kept making sake with adding distilled alcohol. The situation started to change at the end of the 1960s, beginning of the 1970s, When several breweries decided to go back to the original method of sake brewing without using any additional alcohol. This type of sake is called junmai sake or junmaishu in Japanese. It's translated as pure rice alcohol or pure rice sake, made from just rice and water with the help of koji and yeast. There is a name for non-junmai sake, aruten, but to be honest, I have not noticed that people use it extensively. So having said the foundation, we can now move to the classification itself. All sake is divided into two major categories, table sake and premium or special designation sake, as it's translated properly from Japanese. Table sake is called futsushu, which means just ordinary sake. Nowadays, it accounts for 60-65% of the sake market in Japan. But its share is constantly shrinking. Futsushu is non-junmai sake, and its rice polishing ratio is usually 80-90%. It's not strictly regulated as premium sake. Besides distilled alcohol, it may contain other additives to improve its taste, but there is no limit for how much of distilled alcohol and additives can be added. There is a perception that futsushu is not a very good sake. Actually, it's not that simple. I've come across a few very nice table sake, and it depends on the brewery. Many breweries still make very good futsushu. However, it's true that some futsushu are not particularly great. They might give you a headache and hangover, and cheap and not very balanced futsushu is probably responsible for a lot of bad experiences people had with sake. So, if your previous encounter with sake was painful, keep listening. I'm going to tell you about premium stuff. People often ask, while sake brewers still add alcohol, and in case of futsushu, it is to drive the cost down. That's why futsushu is cheap. In case of more premium sake, the reason, however, is different. A lot of nice flavors developed during brewing process are left in the rice after the sake is pressed. In order to draw these flavors out and keep them in the final product, brewers were and are adding alcohol just before pressing the sake. Basically, it is a tool to adjust sake flavor and style. In premium sake, there is a strict limit of how much alcohol can be added to sake. It is 10% of the total weight of polished rice used in brewing. So, the more you polish the rice, the more refined sake you get, as you achieve a higher ratio of starch to other elements. But it comes with a cost. You have to use more rice, because you polished off a significant amount of it. It takes longer to make sake, and you have to put more skills and efforts to brew sake from highly polished rice. So, it's the main reason why sake with a higher polishing ratio is more expensive. There are 8 grades or styles of the premium sake category, and they are based on the 2 criteria I've just mentioned, addition of distilled alcohol and polishing ratio. There are 4 pairs of junmai, non-junmai sake based on the polishing ratio. Let's look at them. The first pair of premium or special designation sake is junmai and honjozu. Initially, I think, the polishing ratio for both was set at 70% or higher. Again, less if you think numerically. However, the polishing ratio criteria was eventually dropped for junmai, and it now can be any. It is usually around 70 still. Junmai sake is usually more savory and sweeter, while honjozu is usually more fragrant and dry. But it's a great oversimplification. I will do a separate episode on flavor and taste profiles of various sake grades and types. The second pair is tokubetsu. You can have both tokubetsu junmai and tokubetsu honjozu. The word tokubetsu in Japanese means special, and it could be anything. There is no special requirements to call sake special. Sorry for unintended span. In my experience, it is often a higher polishing ratio, which takes the sake to the next category, but it could be still Honjozo or Junmai in terms of flavor profile and style. So if brewer doesn't want to mislead consumers in terms of what they expect from the sake they buy. Or the brewer can use different types of rice, polished to different degrees for the starter and the main fermentation. Or it could be some seasonal variation. But basically, it's Junmai or Honjozo sake with some twist. The next pair is Junmai Ginjo and Ginjo. I mentioned Ginjo in the previous episode. It's a special style of sake, usually with fruity or floral aroma profile, and very refined. The polishing ratio for Ginjo sake, both Junmai and non-Junmai, is 60% or higher. In terms of flavor profiles, the difference is usually quite subtle. Ginjo sake tends to be more on drier side, while Junmai Ginjo on a fruitier, slightly sweeter side. But again, it's not that straightforward. Oh, another thing which confused me in the beginning. Non-Junmai Ginjo is called just Ginjo. So if there is no word Junmai in the name or on the bottle, it has alcohol added. The final pair is Junmai Daiginjo and Daiginjo. Basically, Daiginjo means super ginjo with a polishing ratio of 50% and beyond. I tried sake with polishing ratio of less than 10%, meaning that more than 90% of the rice grain had been polished off. But there is a sake with 1% polishing ratio. In my opinion, it's a bit of gimmick to show off. It's very expensive. So here you are, 8 grades or styles of premium sake explained and classified. Just to sum up, because it's a lot of information to digest. You can divide all sake in 2 big categories. Table sake, futsushu, which is not strictly regulated, and premium or special designation sake, which is regulated quite tight. Keep in mind that depending on the brewery, futsushu might be pretty good or not so good. Premium sake can also be divided into 2 big groups. Junmai, which is sake made strictly from rice and water using koji and yeast, and non-junmai, sometimes called aroten, where a bit of distilled alcohol is added at the end of the brewing process to draw more flavors from the rice. Premium sake is also classified by polishing or milling ratio. The first level is Junmai and Honjozo. Junmai doesn't have any legal requirements for a polishing ratio, while Honjozo is a non-Junmai sake with a polishing ratio of 70% or higher. The second level is Tokubetsu Junmai and Tokubetsu Honjozo. Typically, should have something special in terms of polishing ratio, brewing method, rice, and so on. Then we have Ginjo and Junmai Ginjo, with a polishing ratio of 60% or higher, and the most premium category is Daiginjo and Junmai Daiginjo. The polishing ratio there should be 50% and beyond. Now, a word of caution, and I have already mentioned it in my previous episode, and I will probably keep talking about it in the future. The higher grade of sake doesn't necessarily make it better or even more expensive. That's why some people try to avoid word grade and prefer to use style instead. You can have amazing Junmai sake from a very reputable brewery, which could be much more interesting and more expensive than some Ginjo sake. This is the reason why many people now criticize the classification. Some breweries are not interested in making Ginjo style and want to focus on Junmai sake, but they find it's quite difficult to persuade consumers that their Junmai is better than some Junmai Ginjo and Junmai Daiginjo in the market. Especially it's hard outside Japan, where we just assume that Ginjo sake is premium and better. Not true. Now, sake of the episode. This time, I would like to talk about Dabasakura Oka Ginjo, a superb premium sake. As you can see, or hear, from the name, it's Ginjo, a sake made from highly polished rice with addition of a bit of distilled alcohol. In this case, the polishing ratio is 50%, meaning that a half of a rice grain has been polished off. Diwazakura Sake Brewery is one of my favorite breweries, and located in Yamagata Prefecture, which is quite famous in Japan for its focus on ginja sake. Diwazakura is a relatively young brewery, being founded in 1892. Interestingly, the founding Nakane family already had two sake breweries by the time they started Diwazakura. The name of the brewery comes from two words, Dewa, an ancient name of Yamagata Prefecture, and Zakura, which is sakura, cherry blossom. For me, it sounds very fresh and delicate as cherry blossom petals, and it's true for Diwazakura sake style. Diwazakura Brewery was one of the first in Japan to release affordable ginja sake, and it was oka. Back then, ginja was still more like a trophy type of sake made for competitions rather than general consumer. Oka ginja was very well received, triggering the so-called ginja boom. Diwazakura Oka is a very delicate and fresh sake with fruity, peach, pear, and melon notes. On the first sip, tastes dry and crispy, but as you drink it, oka starts showing its sweeter side with flavors like honey, dry fruit, and even a bit of honey melon. It has a lush, creamy texture and a very rounded character. You can definitely have it on its own. It's a pleasure to sip it with some nibbles like cheese, nuts, even cured meat. But it's a perfect sake to have with sashimi or seafood in general. Its crispness and freshness offset some oiliness in fish. Or you can have it with light dishes like salads, steamed chicken, and so on. If you ask me, Diwazakura Oka Ginju is an ideal sake to try if you never had sake before. You won't be disappointed. So that's it for today. I'll be back with more episodes. In the meantime, if you never tried sake, buy it and try. Please send me an email or leave a comment about your experience. If you can't find Diwazakura Oka, try different Diwazakura sake. They all are just amazing. Or any ginja sake. Go to Sugidama blog, which, surprise surprise, on sugidama.co.uk, and explore the tasting notes section. You can always find there a nice sake to try. If you like the episode and want more, hit the subscribe button. Please leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Thanks a lot for listening. Kanpai! Suge, 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 suge dama blog. Suge, 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 suge dama.